What's happening, y'all? Welcome back to Retired to Hunt. Got a little something different coming at you today, man. So here recently, I had the pleasure to sit down with my buddy Michael of the Hunting Stories podcast, and we had one hell of a talk about hunting, man. It wasn't anything species specific, just overall hunting stories. He's got a cool format he's running over there for his show, and I had a hell of a time doing it. So we're going to release this thing together. You guys make sure to go over to his page, follow him, and listen to what he's got coming up there at the Hunting Stories podcast, because man, we had one hell of a good talk about hunting. So without further ado, let's hop right into it.
All right, Josh, welcome to the Hunting Stories podcast, brother. How you doing?
Man, I'm outstanding, man. Thanks for having me. It's another beautiful night on the mountain. Is it daylight savings time, or it feels like it?
That got me yesterday too. I was like, what the hell's going on? Like, the sun's still up. And
yeah.
Which means my kids are still fired up when they should be going to bed, but whatever.
we'll fix that.
Yeah, buddy. But hey, I'm glad you're here. I know we met, was it back in, shit, that was August, I think?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, back at Western Hunt Fest. And I know at that time I was like, I got to get you on, got to tell your stories. And I've been listening to your podcast ever since. And you had a crazy fall. From people drawing guns at you to moose and just all sorts of shit. So I'm excited to hear some of your stories. I'm sure I've heard some of them already. But let's kick this thing off just by letting you introduce yourself so the people that don't already know you can get to
know you. Yeah, so I'm Josh Walker, former NFL lineman. Well, let me start with – so first of all, man, hunting's been there for me before football ever was, man. I started playing football in the eighth grade. I was a big kid, man. In the eighth grade, I was already like 6'4", 290 pounds. But I wasn't even playing football, right, in the seventh grade. And dude, so I'm walking laps in gym class one day, and the gym teacher just so happens to be the football coach. And he's like, "Well, man, you know, start working out with us, man. I'd love to have you on the team." I laughed at him. I'm like, football? Like, I literally never watched a football game in my life, cared nothing about it. He's like, "Just try it." I'm like, "All right, man, whatever." So I went in there, started working out with him, and I hated it, man. Like, I absolutely hated working out. You know, it being the first time in my life ever working out, like, you know, you're all sore and you're a kid and, you know, you let it get to you. And I'm like, why would I even do this? And I don't have the kind of parents that would be like, no, you're not going to quit. You know, they were just like, whatever. Like, if you like it, like, great. If not, whatever. Yeah. So I'm like, man, like, whatever. I'm going to keep doing this. So first year was in the eighth grade. Like I said, I was a big kid. So I'm instantly starting, you know, the year before I go to high school, and I'm playing D-line, don't know what I'm doing. I'm just big. And made a few plays, nothing special at all. And then going to high school, best thing probably ever happened to me. So I was a baseball player also, left that out. I was a baseball player since I was like 4 or 5 years old, man. I used to pitch and play first. And I was going into high school, and I had to try out for, you know, the baseball team, and I got my ass cut. So – that's probably the best thing to happen to me. So then it was football or bust, you know, from that point forward. And so kept playing football freshman year. You know, I was still a big kid and I was okay, probably, you know, maybe a little bit better than okay, but nothing crazy. I'm still learning the game of football. You know what I mean? And then going into sophomore year, shit, I'm on the JV team, man. You know, I'm not a sophomore playing on the varsity. I'm on the JV team. Still learning football, probably doing some good things here and there, but nothing crazy. Then the next year I started, you know, my junior year, and was playing some really, really good football at that point, you know, kind of figured out the game, and it slowed down to me a little bit. By no means was I a blue chip athlete or anything like that, but I had the size to be, right? And slowly starting to learn the game and stuff like that. Then senior year, I had a pretty solid senior campaign, pretty good and solid. And, you know, for most people, it was probably really, really good, man. But just for me knowing ball the way I know it, I go back and look at that tape and I'm like, holy shit, man, you got to bend. Like, that's not good enough, dude. But
now, do you think you got better from experience, or did you just have like a coach that just like brought you up and got you there? A little bit of both.
So with all due respect to my coaches, man, you know, I come from a real rural area of Tennessee, man, real country area, and super, you know, tough, hard-nosed football coaches. You know, they knew ball, you know, like I said, all due respect to them. They knew ball, but I don't know about it being the coaching much as it was the want to be good at the sport. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. Getting reps and feeling into your frame.
Yeah. And that's a good point you just alluded to there about the frame, man. I was so big that I couldn't even fully use what I had, if that made sense. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I wasn't bending, and being an offensive lineman, you got to bend. It's all about leverage. And I was just bigger and stronger and meaner than the other kids. So I would win reps, you know what I mean? But I wasn't playing with good technique. But anyway, good enough to go sign a full ride scholarship in Middle Tennessee, played at Middle. Let me tell you this. I redshirted there my first year, which goes to show you was not ready to play. And then my second year after the, you know what, you said you wanted details. So we had a guy, he was a guard. He transferred from the University of Tennessee. I ain't going to say his name. Good guy, but I ain't going to say his name. Transferred from the University of Tennessee. So, you know, at Middle Tennessee, when something like that happens, he's automatically penciled in as a starter, right? That's just the way it is. Yeah. Coming from the SEC, he's penciled in. And here I am coming off a redshirt campaign. It's like, you know, maybe he got a little better, but he just redshirted, you know? So he's in there, starts game one, and, you know, he probably did have stomach issues, but he wasn't practicing enough, man. And with football, you can't miss a whole bunch of practice and think you're about to play on Saturday or Sunday to the best of your ability. And he'll miss a lot of practice. Well, I was his backup. So, you know, they're getting to see me a lot. They're like, oh, well, geez, like, you know, the tournament. So I was the type of guy, man, I just wanted to be good. Like, for instance, I won most improved lineman, both on the field and in the weight room every year I was in school. And it was just, I wanted to, every year, like, I was like, well, I can get a little bit better.
That's exponential growth, man. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, like, man. That's what it's all about.
You're winning it year after year after year. You're getting a hell of a lot better.
That's what it's all about, man. I'm very proud of that too, man. And like going back to the guy at UT. So he starts the first game, played okay, but still missing practice. Second game, all of a sudden I'm starting, ripped off 43 straight starts from that point forward. But yeah. But point being is, man, you know, you go from a red shirt and all of a sudden you see this guy come in from the University of Tennessee and it's like, God, dog it. I know they're going to put him at the starter. Sure enough, they put him as a starter. You know what I mean? So that's how I got my, you know, that's how I started playing was I got this SEC guy, you know, and he was from Tennessee too. Like I said, cool guy, but I had to beat him out, man. And I was able to do that. But anyway, Middle Tennessee, played there 5 years, ended up going undrafted to the Colts to start with in 2014, got cut there. Was there from, you know, April in the draft, right? As soon as the draft's over, you go straight there. And so I was there until week two. And crazy story, too, how first time ever getting cut. So I had just signed the lease to a house 4 days before.
Oh,
dude. So I'm in Home Depot. So the house had sat for a couple months, like on the market, waiting for somebody to either buy it or rent it. And so we went to rent it and we went to Home Depot and there were spiders in the garage. So I needed to go get some spray from Home Depot. So go to Home Depot. I'll never forget it. I'm holding a jug of spider spray, walking up to the counter. Bring, bring, bring. I look at my phone, unknown number. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Answer. Hello. Is this Josh? I'm like, yeah. Yeah, Josh. So Mr. Grigson's going to want to see you up here at the office. Hopefully you're not too busy. And I knew what it was. And then the guy's like, you're probably going to want to bring your iPad, which is your playbook. You know what I mean? So, like, you learn real quick how, and you want to talk about making you cold to that whole process. Like instantly, like after that, I was like, here's the deal. You got two ways you can go about it. Number one, you can say, fuck you, Colts. I can play. You know what I'm saying? I'm just going to keep rolling. Or you can say, damn, I guess I'm not good enough. Maybe I should just pack it up and go to the CFL or something like that. Well, yeah. I took road A, you know, and 2 days later, I'm living out of a leather bag in Green Bay, Wisconsin for a couple months because I get a call and they're like, we want to sign him to the practice squad. Great. So I went to Green Bay, played my first year on the practice squad. Then the next year, ended up making an active roster, which if people don't know, man, as an undrafted free agent, especially with a quarterback like that, as an offensive lineman with a quarterback like 12 to make that roster is, dude, it was, man, one of the happiest days of my life. My O-line coach, James Campen, called me, and I was on the way home from the facility on final cut day because we had, like, a workout, and you literally watch people get cut. And so you leave, but you know there's 3 hours left. So once you leave the building, you know there's about 3 hours left where they can still call you and say, hey, come back up here. Like, decision's been made. So I'm driving home, stomach in knots, but I'm like, well, I at least made it to the last couple, you know, because I left the building. And he calls, and he's, like, talking in a real somber voice. He's like, big man, I want to thank you for everything you've done here for us, blah, blah, this and that. And I'm like, God, dog. And he's like, you know, you're one of my favorite undrafted guys to come in. You know, your work ethic, da, da, da. And I'm just silent. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. He's like, oh, I'm just fucking with you, man. You did it. Dude, I cried like a baby, man. I was sobbing on the phone, man. It was a cool moment. I'll never forget it.
That's awesome. That's fucked up, dude. But it's awesome.
I know, man. He got me, dude. He got me.
That's too good, but, man. That's too good.
Ended up playing there the rest of 14, all of 15. Ended up getting hurt the third preseason game of 16. Ended up injury settling. And I was in Houston week two, literally like 3 days later, I'm in Houston playing for the Texans, and was there all of seven, all of 16, going into 17, ended up getting cut there at a camp in 17. And then literally 2 days later, I'm in Jacksonville for two straight years. Yeah. And that's where I finished up, was in Jacksonville. It's crazy business, man.
Yeah, now you're in freaking Colorado, just elk hunting, turkey hunting, just living the dream. I think I don't think I saw anyone goose hunting as much as you did.
Man, I love those. So here's the thing, man. Like you said, I love being out here and hunting elk and stuff like that. But one of my first loves outside of white-tailed deer was hunting ducks and geese. And so I'm a traveling duck. I used to be a lot more, used to do a lot more of it. But I mean, I've been fortunate enough to kill ducks and geese in 17 different states in the country. I really, really love doing it. And, but like I said, once I got out here, and because, you know, playing football, you don't have a September, you don't have October, you don't have a November, you don't have a December, you don't have a January, none of that. So, you know, I finally got to come out here and get to some of those Western game animals, and it's incredible. So, you know, the ducks and birds and upland, all that stuff kind of took a back burner, because if I've got a big game tag, I'm not going to be hunting no kind of bird. That's just what it is.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's let's do this. Let's take a step back. I know that you said you've been hunting since you were real little. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that. Like, when did you start hunting? What were you hunting right off the bat? And, like, and, you know, go from there.
Dude, so, yeah, man. Some of my earliest memories are in the woods, man. Very, very young kid. As soon as I could get my hunter safety license, back in the time when I was – you know, that age to get your hunter safety. I think I was 9 years old when I was finally able to get my hunter safety. And
did your dad get you into it? Or
oh yeah,
or
was it? Yeah, okay. He did. And he was nowhere, like, he's nothing like the type of obsessed that I am. He's more of a meat hunter, right? Like, oh, there's a deer in the garden. Or like, there's a deer in the field. So I grew up on, I grew up on 34 acres. And the way we would hunt, my dad used to run a machine shop out of his garage, and he had one employee, a guy named Dick. And he used to come over on Saturday mornings, man, with like bologna biscuits, egg biscuits. He had stopped the gas. There's one, dude, I'm from the country. Like, there's one gas station there. And so he'd stop and get biscuits, and he'd come over, and we had this old decrepit fire pit. Like, one wheel was broke off, and like, just old, been there for years. We'd start a fire right before the sun would come up. As the sun comes up, we're looking over the field below the house. It's just like literally like an old Johnson's grass field. It's just a field, man. And they would use it to cross over now and again. I've shot a bunch of deer off of a fence post, just leaned up on that thing.
That's awesome, man.
Dude, yeah, I had a lot of good memories hunting whitetail. And I can remember the first time getting to go out by myself. I guess I was 10, and got to go out on my own, you know, on that property I grew up on. And it was actually with a youth model, hexagonal barrel, loose powder, 50 caliber CVA, brass butt, old school muzzleloader, man. And I was by myself, dude, and I went in the woods, and I was all scared of the dark, right? I'm a 10-year-old kid. You know, in the woods, it gets dark sooner than the fields, right? So I'm in the woods. I'm like, well, maybe there's some light in the field. And I remember walking to the field. I'm like, all right, there's a little bit of light left. And I just remember shimmying my fat ass up in this cedar tree all the way to the base of it. So literally there's limbs surrounding me. And I'm like, this is a good idea, you know, and overlooking this field. And all of a sudden, crunch, 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 here comes a button butt, probably 50 yards, frontal shot, boom, with that muzzleloader, smoke everywhere, smoke clear, and it's laying there kicking. And the rule was I had to have a walkie-talkie with me, you know, when I was out by myself, and they were sitting on the porch.
Makes sense.
And so I'm hitting the button saying, I got one, I got one, I got one. I wasn't hitting the button, but I was screaming so loud, they heard me from the porch, man. They heard me all the way from the porch screaming, man, and I got one.
That's awesome, man. The CVA muzzleloader was actually my first gun too, man.
Really?
I wasn't 10. I was in Washington hunting elk at I was probably 30. It was the first time I went out with one of those. But, man, those things are fun to shoot.
Oh, they're awesome, man. Boom!
Yeah, man. Swatting them smoke so you can see what the hell you just did.
Yeah, dude. I actually shot an antelope this year with a little more souped up CVA than the one I was shooting as a kid, man. It's a CVA Optima 2. Still 50 cal. You can't use scopes here, so I shot him, you know, open globe sight, you know, about 110, 115 yards, man. It was a good shot.
That's pretty good. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it was cool.
That's awesome. So we've been kind of rambling here, but I know that we brought you here to hear some stories. I don't know if you, or to tell some stories, but I don't know if you want to dive into the ones from this season or if you have any particular ones in mind. But let's jump into some of the stories that you love to tell. So let's start by you kind of setting the stage. Where, when, what, and go from there, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what. The Moose one was a good one this year, man. It was a good one. Yeah, so I was let's see, what season was it? It was, I think it was archery. Yeah, it had to have been archery. So it was archery, and I was truck camping. And so I'm about 30 minutes down this old decrepit dirt road up in northern Colorado. And I've got a big, like, five-person Coleman quick setup tent. Like, one of those, I mean, literally, it's like just pops out super quick. And that's what I use when I truck camp. So I'm laying in there, and I just got back from – so I just got there that afternoon, and I had set up, and I figured I would do a little walk, you know, before it got dark, just because. So I walk in there maybe a mile and sit down. I hear bugles. It was incredible. So I actually go to chase a bugle, and it started getting a little later than I wanted to be. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to turn around and go in there in the morning. So I go back to the tent, man, and I'm laying there, and I pass out. And then all of a sudden, about 2:05 in the morning, I hear raking on a tree, man, really, really close by. And it sounds big. I'm like, dude, this is cool. Hopefully this is an elk. I can wake up, you know, shooting like shoot his ass. But it sounded like a big animal, just raking, raking, raking. It was incredible. And so the background noise was literally light wind, a little creek down below me. And then this raking is so loud, I can hear it over the creek. Like, it's that close. And I'm out there by myself, man. And I get woke up to that. And finally I hear it. I'm like, oh, that's 100% a moose. That is awesome. Like, that's a moose. Well, one moose, you know, I wasn't that worried about it. And I lay there and I'm just like, this is incredible. But then from the backside of my tent, another one. I'm like, all right, so we got two moose. I'm not as comfortable as I once was, man, when I thought there was only one. So I reached down in
between
my,
them, right?
Yeah, man, I'm right in between them. So I reached down to grab my 10 millimeter and I'm holding it on my chest, man. My heart's starting to beat a little bit. Well, then a couple more minutes later, I hear from the other side of the tent, man. So there's three bull moose converging pretty much on my tent, man. Well, they're converging on that raking bull is what it was. They were headed towards that raking bull. And so I'm laying there, my heart's pounding. I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man. I'm like, do I yell? Do I cut my lantern on? Do I don't do anything? Like, I don't know what to do right now. You know, I just know there's three bull moose outside. It's 2 a.m. I'm by myself. I got to do whatever's right, man, or else I could die out here. And so they kind of go quiet, and then, you know, they start grunting again. And all of a sudden, one, I can tell he's facing me. Like, you can just tell, like, it's like a turkey or a bull when you hear it bugle sometimes. It's like, oh, he's looking at us. You know what I mean? You can't see him because it's dark through the tent, but I could tell he was looking. And all of a sudden, he just kept getting louder, louder, louder. And then I can just tell he's right by the tent. My heart is pounding. And then all of a sudden, he just stops. It goes silent. It felt like for 10 minutes, but probably about 10 seconds. And then all of a sudden, through the moonlight, I just see a shadow, dude, on the tent. And I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And it's like you stick your finger and, like, rub it on the tent. Just, and it was his nose right above my shoulder, dude. I take my left hand, whack, smack him across the nose. Fuck you, moose. Fuck you. And I got my pistol pointed at the side of the tent, safety off, ready to blast, man. And he took off running towards the creek. And I've never heard an animal run so far in my life, dude. Like, it was
bad, man.
Dude, that moose was probably terrified, dude. But he stuck his nose on the tent and I slapped the shit out of him.
God, I can't even imagine. For those people that are listening that don't know moose, like, say you live on the East Coast or whatever it may be, when you're out here in the West, like, you don't really got to worry about mountain lions. They're going to keep to themselves. You don't got to worry about bears. They're going to keep to themselves. Moose are the only thing that are, like, dangerous, right, in the woods. Everything else is going to keep to itself. And being in between three of them, man, that's fucking crazy.
Dude, I was terrified, man.
Smacking one with your hand, right?
I was terrified, brother. I ain't going to lie to you. When I saw the shadow, it really kicked in. Like, this feeling over me was like, I guess that's the fight or flight deal, because when I saw the shadow, I was like, I got to act. And then all of a sudden, he touched my tent. And I'm like, well, I got to do it. I just popped you right on the nose, dude.
God, man.
Yeah, it was insane. Terrifying, bro. I ain't going to lie. It was hard to get back to sleep.
Yeah, I Do you want to add anything else to that story? Otherwise, I was just thinking about the other stories I've heard you tell from this season. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask about the guy who drew his gun on you.
Dude, this is day one of what you're talking about is day one of elk season this year, man. So
yeah,
I had got in the woods 5 days before season started. I got in there like August 27th, dude. I was living out of the back of my 8x12 pull behind box trailer, man. It was an incredible setup. You know, I've got a wall tent, all that good stuff, but it was, you know, it allowed me to be super mobile because I could pull into a spot, pop my cot in there. And then if a day or two goes by, I'm not into elk, I'm on to the next one. I'm not tearing down camp, having to let the stove cool and load up all that other stuff. But anyway, I get in there, I get on some elk, but they're completely mute, dude, like not making any noise, but I'm still like, this is cool. Cause there's elk. But anyway, day one comes around, high hopes that morning, didn't see anything, didn't hear anything. But then that night we're hiking into this water hole, dude. It was like 3 miles back in there straight up, man. And get back in there and it's beautiful. Thank God we had it to ourselves. I'm like, we're going to shoot something here tonight. Like this is a badass water hole. And
yeah,
we're set up on the edge of it. And so the setup is we weren't sitting down. There was no reasonable way to make a blind where we could sit down and still be able to shoot just with the cover and the way the ground laid and stuff. So we literally used this down tree that was about waist high. And we just leaned up against it and we had some cover in front of us and the water hole obviously in front of us. And so we get there about 3 hours before it gets dark and, you know, 45 minutes before the sun was about to set, you know, you start getting fired up because it's like, now's probably the time stuff's about to start moving. So we're sitting there and we're getting fired up and I hear crunch, crunch, crunch. And I look over to the right and it's an old man. He's probably mid to late 70s, comes hobbling in. Gray hair, gray mustache, gray goatee, had a gray shirt on, blue jeans, and like some hiking shoes. No arms, and he's holding a rifle. So he comes walking up. I'm like, what the hell is going on, dude? Coming in here.
This is the middle of archery season, right?
Yes, man. The only thing that he could have been trying to shoot with a rifle is a grouse, number one. I don't know if you had to have arms on. I don't think you do, but you may if you're hunting with a rifle. Again, don't quote me. But nobody comes in. I don't think people sit water holes for grouse. This dude comes in and sits on the water hole, leans back, puts his hands behind his head, like hanging out. I'm like, what the hell? So I start loud as I can on my diaphragm, cow calling as loud as I can. Would not look my way. I know for a fact, unless he was impaired, you know, hearing impaired, he had to have heard me because I'm screaming on this thing. So I'll be honest with you. At this point, I'm mad because I'm like, hey, I told my boy Lance, I said, he hears us. Like, I know he hears us. And he's sitting like 60 yards away, looking at the water hole, holding his rifle, hanging out, sitting on his ass, just hanging out, dude. I'm like, this is ridiculous. So I start waving at him. He's kind of looking past us to the water hole. So like, not looking at us, but like, kind of, because we're looking at the same water hole. So like, he's kind of looking past. Point is, unless he's visually impaired, which is an old man, you would think you see an arm moving through the woods, man. And so I'm waving at him, cow calling at the same time, nothing. So my buddy Lance is digging in his pack, and he's got an orange Kefaru pullout. And he starts waving at. Finally, the guy starts looking at us a little harder. And then all of a sudden, he waves back. I'm like, thank God. So he's, you know, Lance is putting his pullout up, and he's actually getting up, dusting himself off. And he's about to walk off. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not mad anymore because maybe he literally didn't know we were here, right? But at the same time, I'm like, what is he doing in here, though, with no arms, blue jeans, and a rifle sitting on the water hole? I don't know. I ain't here to judge. I don't know what he's doing. Anyway, he goes to walk off, so we kind of start shooting the shit, kind of laughing about the situation. All of a sudden, I peek back just to, you know, look at him and see how far he'd gotten, and all I see is he's drawn down on us. I said, get the fuck down. So we get down. I instantly grab my 10mm out of my bino harness, shuck one in. I'm like, dude, my buddy didn't see it. I said, he's pointing a gun right at us, dude. He's like, bullshit. I'm like, I swear to God, bro. So I go to stand back up, peek back up over the log. All I see is a shimmer of the scope and a barrel looking right at me. I'm like, dude, I stay down. He's still looking right at us, dude. So, and I get it. Hindsight's 20/20. You could say, well, why didn't you just yell at him? Well, when you've walked into a spot like that, I was trying to do everything I can to preserve the hunt, man. Like if I yell at him, it's probably over with, right, for the night. If I, hey, then the hunt's probably over, right? But it's like, well, is your life worth it? It's like, well, probably not. But fact of the matter is, I thought the situation was under control. Now, if he would have fired around, best believe, you know what I mean? I'm saying something where I'm returning fire, one of the two. But, you know, I thought you know, I made the decision. Let's not yell. Let's just, you know what I mean? See what's going to happen. And then eventually he starts to walk off. And this time I watch him the whole way. He's literally walking across an open field. Like, it blew my mind that where he came from, he walked in and just walked across an open field, dude, for like 600 yards. Like, just get on the edge, man. Like, where are you? Anyway, goes to walk off and he gets like 200 yards away and we start bullshitting again, right? He's a long ways away. Look back and he's pointing the rifle again. We get back down. Yeah, dude. Yeah, man. Does it again. Yeah, man. So I don't know. And here's the thing, man. I'm so glad that, because I'll be honest with you, man. I was furious. And I told my buddy, I said, all right, let's go. I said, let's go. I said, I got to meet this old man. Like, let's go. He said, man, let's stay and hunt. So we stayed as long as we could. And I'm like, let's go. Because I wanted to run into him. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know what I would have done. And I'm glad that I didn't get the opportunity to even make that decision. But I was furious, man. Dude pointed a gun at us several times. And he was too old to know better, man. Like, it don't matter if you thought you saw something in there. Like, the first thing you do, you don't point your gun at it. Like, you don't, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. He was intoxicated or something.
He stumbled in there, man. And he stumbled out.
Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't sound like someone who's not on something.
Right. I'd have to agree, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That story's mind blowing, man. I don't even know what I would do.
It was, dude, day one of elk season. This is evening one, man.
Yeah. I can imagine, like, we've all been there where we, like, probably do one too many things too much to keep the hunt where we want it to get. You're, like, not going at him. Absolutely. We always want to keep the hunt going, so I understand that part of it. But, man, I'll say this, Josh. I'm glad you didn't go after him.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Me too, man, because that it takes quite a bit, man, to get me seeing red, man. It really, really does, man. Even doing what I used to do for a living, you know, I can cut it on and off, man. But stuff like that, stuff where you know better, that really, really had me seeing red, man.
Yeah, dude, I'm sure. I remember, I think that fucking – so we left Western Hunt Fest, and that was basically like the sort of God, what was it? Antelope season. So I did antelope season. We were chatting then. And then, like, next thing I know is I'm getting a message or seeing your posts on Instagram about that guy drawing a gun on you. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? Yeah, it was like, man, 6 days after we met. So I wanted to hear that story from you specifically, because that just, I can't even imagine, man.
Yeah, dude. It was probably the hairiest. And I, you know, I've had some close encounters with bears and the moose and stuff like that. But the gun being drawn down, man, that's a different type of feeling, man. You know, it was a different type of feeling. I felt strong enough that I was ready to return fire. I mean, it was not good. It's not good.
Yeah. I bet. All right. Well, let's keep going, man. What other stories you got? Give us one of your favorite stories. Kind of set the stage for
us. Man, I'll tell you, one of the coolest trips I've ever been on happened last year. And that was going down to Bimini, down to the Bahamas and doing some spearfishing, man.
Okay.
This is my first time ever going. I got probably my best friend, man, Brandon Linder. Played ball with him in Jacksonville. Really, really best center I've ever played with. Solid dude. Very serious outdoorsman. I'm actually going down to his place April 3rd through the 7th to hopefully shoot two Osceola turkeys and some hogs and
do some
sheep's head fish and stuff like that. But so fly down into Miami. He's got a place in Miami. And we stay there the first night. Eat good. Eat this Cuban spot. Had like a couple pictures of sangria. I mean, just... Miami, Florida is just it's a cool place just for a couple days, right? Like, I don't want to live there, but a couple days of it, hey man, it's a cool place. And
nowhere like Miami, man.
Yeah, man. So
nowhere like it.
We eat at a good Cuban joint and go home and get a decent nice rest. We woke up pretty early because we head south the next morning down to Alamorada, which is where his boat is docked at, and it's dry docked there at a marina in Alamorada, and he's got a nice yellowfin, 36-footer, trip 350s, big old tower. I mean, it's a badass rig. And me, him, and two other buddies hop on the boat, and we shoot across about 110 miles by boat to the island of Bimini. And
is that like 3 hours?
No, probably an hour 45.
Damn.
Yeah, rolling. I mean, rolling. But so we get across there, dude, and Linder, again, this guy's born and raised in South Florida, and he's like, I've never seen conditions like this. I mean, blue and flat, calm as can be. It was incredible. And we get halfway across, and there's this a buoy just floating in the middle of nothing. I mean, we're like 80 miles off at this point, you know, from the coast. And dude, it was crazy. So much life was on that buoy, man. And we're just free spooling squid, you know, catching some triple tail and stuff like that off those buoys, just in the middle of nowhere, not a boat to be seen, no land in sight, like just in the middle of the ocean. And we continue on, and that night we go and unload, then we go back out and we do some deep dropping, and we caught some yellow eye snapper, and we're catching these things in like 1200 feet of water, man, 7 pounds of weight, electric reels, golden tile fish. What else were we catching? I can't remember what else we caught, but right before the sun went down, I was like, dude, I got my 10 weight. I was like, where are the bonefish? Like, I'm trying to catch me a bonefish. He's like, all right, I know a good point, where we can go try to catch them. And so, you know, like I said, he's got a good sized boat, so he can only get so close to the beach. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
so he anchors up like, I don't know, it was probably like 100 yards, man, to the sand. And, I ain't gonna lie, the reason I wanted to go do it is I got a fear of the ocean, man. And just to see that I've got just to see that I've got 100 yards to walk to get to the shore, I was freaked out, man. I'm like, holy shit. So I jump out, dude, it's chest high on me, man. You know, I'm 6'5", bro. It's chest high on me. And I'm like, this is deep, man. And I'm holding the fly pole over my head with my tackle box, and my heart is pounding. And so my one buddy, Linder, who's boated it, stays on the boat. He's cleaning fish that we just caught. Well, me and the other two guys, they get in the water. They're South Florida guys too. So they're just laughing, joking, like, ha ha ha. And I'm looking around, you know, for the bull shark that's about to swim by my legs. I already knew it was going to happen. Plenty deep enough water for a big old shark to just be cruising. You know what I mean? And we get to the, so the point was actually on the opposite side. So it's like a peninsula, right? We're on one side with the fishing spots on the other side of the land. You know what I mean? So we got to walk to the land, walk across it, get to the point. Well, we get on the other side and it's wind blown, right? So not really conducive to sight fishing bonefish. So a couple casts and that was it. So we go to walk across and I see Linder. We're headed back to the boat. He's throwing fish carcasses in the water. I'm like, you got to be shitting me. Are you throwing them in the water already? He starts laughing. I'm like, I was mad. I'll be honest with you. Like, I didn't even say nothing back. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I start walking back and my heart is racing, man. And climb up in the water and he's just cracking up. Didn't see a shark there, but he's like, nods his head for me to come up to the bow where he's cleaned the fish. Dude, there's all kinds of sharks and stingrays up at the bow of the boat, bro. Literally, I just didn't see them because they were at the front of the boat, man. But I was right there with them, right there next to them, man. So, man, that freaked me out. So I hadn't even been in the water yet as far as spearfishing. So I'm like, God, dog, seeing these sharks right here by the beach. Bro, we were shooting fish 40 miles offshore on the patch reefs. So we weren't doing no shore dives. We were 40 miles off, no land in sight, just on the patch reefs, floating with the current, shooting fish, man. And in the Bahamas, you can't have spear guns. You got to use primitive equipment, which that's a Hawaiian sling or it's a pole spear. We were just using pole spears. A Hawaiian sling is like a slingshot, if you will. You literally, it's like a wooden dowel. So you got a wooden dowel and you got like a spear, right? Like a, almost like a bow fishing arrow, if you will. And it's got a piece of rubberized tubing on the back. You know, you draw it through that, that dowel and you just let it go. It's like a slingshot. But then you got to chase the fish down. So you got to bank on that arrow weighing that fish down enough where you can go grab that fish and get it to the surface. So we went with the pole spears, which is just a carbon fiber spear. I think it was 8 or 10 foot long. And it's got surgical tubing on the back of it. You take that surgical tubing, wrap it between your index finger and thumb, and then you reach up that pole. You reach up that spear and you create that tension.
All right, got it. Like pushing.
Yeah. Okay. So when you go to the fish, you just let go. So I just remember, man, so when you spearfish, not everybody, but they're very safe about their operation, and you never just anchor the boat up and dive for fish. So there's always somebody tending the boat. And the first drop, it was like 40 foot. They're like, the water's so clear, they could see conchs down there. They're like, oh, let's go get these conchs. So they leave me in the boat because I'm like, I'm not getting in 40 foot of water. I'm good, dude. And so they swim down there, dude, like mermaids, man, and just grab those conchs and come up. And so the boat, you know, they're kind of trying to stay in one spot, right, and fight the current because that's where the conchs are. Well, the boat, I'm just drifting in the boat. I'm tending the boat. All of a sudden, they all come up real quick. Whoa, get over here. I'm like, oh, shit. Whoa. Haul ass over there. There's this reef shark that's just tormenting the shit out of us. I'm like, well, y'all going to get out of fucking water or what? And they're like, no, just stay close. I'm like, dude, y'all are nuts, man. And so they got some conchs, and I was like, man, take me to some shallower shit or I ain't getting in, man. So we go to some shallower stuff, and it was like 15 foot of water for the first drop. And I ain't going to lie, if it would have been going with a buddy, I would have been out. Because from seeing the sharks on the beach to reeling him up on the electric reel, just seeing him in the water, I'm like, I don't want to be in the water with these things. And so they're in the water. My buddy Colton is tending the boat, and I'm supposed to be getting in. Well, I'm still sitting on the edge about to chicken out, man. I'm sitting on the gunwale of the boat. I got my GoPro in one hand, spear in the other, mask is all the way on already, fins on. Like, I'm just sitting there, like, thinking about it. I'm like, God, Doug. And I'm like, you don't have to do this. I'm like, you don't have to do this, man. And finally, my buddy Linder yells out, whoa, don't be a bitch. It's just water. I'm like, God, Doug, he's right. So I just plop in the water, man. Boom, plop in the water. I look straight down. There's a trigger fish, like a foot and a half, 2 foot long, right underneath me. Just kind of scurries out the way. I'm like, holy shit, this is it. Never. Well, so here's the deal. Me and my girlfriend went to St. Lucia a few years ago, and I snorkeled, but we had like a rock wall behind us. Like, this is the open ocean, man. And never done anything like it. And so I'm in there, and that trigger fish swims off, and then I start to really look around and look closely. There is jellyfish everywhere, man. I'm talking about they're everywhere. Thank God I bought
like
that
big ones bar. Or like
no,
little
no,
ones?
No, small ones, small ones.
Dude. Oh, those are even the worst, man.
Yeah, man. So I'm like, I've never seen nothing. So I'm swimming against a current, which I don't know if you're a cramper. I'm a cramper, man. And I don't know if you felt that feeling right before your hamstrings are about to cramp. They start to bubble up, man. And I'm like, because literally to get to my buddies, I swam against the current for like 20 yards, like kicking, barely moving anywhere. And a bunch of jellyfish. And I look down, there's a barracuda, a good solid, you know, 3-footer. I'm like, holy shit, I am in the ocean, man. And my buddy Colton, who was in the boat, dude, all of a sudden I see him take off and my heart dropped because he was just going to go do a half circle so he could set back up to redrift because he was getting too far away. But I'm like, all I can think about is it is 20 yards between me and my other buddies. I am terrified. So I finally get over there and I'm holding my GoPro in one hand on the, you know, the stick mount. And then I got my pole in the other. My buddy Linder's going like that underwater to get my attention. And he's pointing down and I'm like, I'm looking. I see a hogfish. I'm like, that is a hog. So before I went, this is just who I am, man. I binge watched. I had a Captain Jack Sparrow, really great fisherman on my show, spear fisherman. Point is, I did a ton of research on spear fishing before I went. And so he points down and in the grass, I'm like, ooh, that's a damn hogfish. Like all these hundreds of videos I watched, here's one in front of me. Never seen one, like besides the fish market, like there's one right below me. I'm like, all right. So I hand him the GoPro and I take me a breath and I'm fins up. You can see on the video, my buddy was late because he did not expect me to make that drop. Literally, he pointed to me. I handed him the GoPro. And I just made a drop, dude, and I took off because my thought process was the quicker I shoot this fish, the quicker I can get out of the water, dude. So it took me a deep breath. I swam down. So I go to swim down, and I ain't going to lie, it was an incredible feeling, dude, dropping down in the ocean like that and the sounds of the bubbles, like when you clear your nose, dude, because you can't just swim down there. Like, you got to clear your nose. Yeah. So I'm going down. And I practiced at the pool, and so I had 45 seconds of bottom time at the Evergreen pool. But all of a sudden, it's living and breathing, and there's all kind of stuff around. About the time I get to the bottom, man. So I get down there, and I start kicking towards you. I'm like, I'm about to make this happen. Getting closer. Finally, I'm like, oh, shit, I'm going to get a shot off. Whack! Busted his ass. Just swim up to the top. As soon as I get to the top, everybody's going nuts, man. And you just hold the fish out of the water so it quits squirming, so it's fucking less attracted to the sharks. Because it's not necessarily the blood that brings them in quick, it's them thrashing around. So
got it.
You swim up and you hold that fish out of the water and then the boat comes up to you. You throw him on the boat. You get out if you want, or if not, you get the guy on the boat to take the slip tip off the pole spear and you keep rolling. So anyway, I hop out and Coach's like, dude, I have never seen anybody do that on their first drop. He's like, I went to the back of the boat to get a beer before I circle back around. I just see your fin sky high going down on the drop. I was like, bro, I was ready to get out of the water, man. But that was my first fish, and I shot they call it a rock hind. It's a strawberry grouper is the, I guess, not scientific name, but what you're supposed to call them, a strawberry grouper. So, dude, we're an 18-foot, and my buddy, again, so first off, you got to have an eye to see these fish that are laying on the bottom, dude. Like, I was impressed. It's a skill, dude. And my buddy's, like, pointing down. I'm like, what? And you can see the video. I'm like, I don't see him. And then he like takes a pole. He's like right there. I'm like, oh, all right. So, dude, everything was all jacked up, man. I didn't have my snorkel on right. So my snorkel was kind of pointed backwards. So, dude, I swallowed so much salt water. It was terrible, bro. So I'm trying to get a breath, and finally I see the fish. I make a drop. Dude, 18 foot of water, bro. So clear my ears. I'm going down, kicking, kicking. By the time I get to the bottom, dude, I was gassed. By the time I got to the bottom, and I see this grouper, and he just – so they're real protective of their den. So he got in his den and put his ass in the den and just faced me and was just going – so they grunt, and that's not good. So anyway, swim down there, boom, I stick his ass. He goes up, he's called rocking himself. So he goes up in his den, and I'm completely out of breath. So I'm kicking as hard as I can to get back to the top. I've got this on video. So I'm holding the surgical tubing, swimming to the top. All of a sudden, I come to a stop. I'm like, ooh. So I start yanking on the spear. Hold on a minute. God damn it. So anyway, I go to jerking on this the surgical tubing, and it won't go nowhere. So I got to let the spear go, dude, and get a breath of air. The thing rocked itself up. And I couldn't get him out of the hole, man. And Linder's all fired up for me and stuff, you know, because he saw I shot the fish. He's like, you want me to go get him? I'm like, no, fuck you. I'm going to go get him. So I take a couple breaths, and I got the spear is literally just floating vertical. You can see it. It ain't going nowhere. And so I just go to drop on this fish again, drop. By the time I get to the bottom again, dude, I got to come back up. And I'm like, dude, go get the fish, man. And he's like, yeah, I knew it. Whatever. You know, he's talking shit. And he swims to the bottom, dude. He bottoms out. He's just hanging out, looking around, because that grouper was making a lot of noise, so it brings the sharks in. So he gets to the bottom. He looks around, dude, like a vet. Starts pulling rocks, looking around, pulling rocks, looking around, reaches in there, pulls the fish out, looks around, comes to the surface. He's like, yeah, we should probably get out of the water for a little bit. I was like, yeah, you ain't got to tell me twice, man. But incredible time, dude. Every night we were eating fish, conch, steak. I mean, that's it was incredible, man. It was just the boys too. It wasn't no guide. Like, it was just the boys out there hanging out. My buddy's got it dialed in. All the kudos go to him. All three of them are saltwater guys. So, you know, they all three, I did nothing, man. I was just there. you know, they were doing all the rigging and all that stuff. You know, it's real. When you really get serious about that stuff, there's some fine tuning involved to saltwater fishing at a high level, man.
For sure, man. For sure. I've done saltwater fishing one time, and it was not fun. I got seasick.
Yes, sir.
I was on a guided trip. This guy was smoking. I mean, I was 16. You know, I was a kid. And this guy's smoking cigars in my face. And I couldn't handle it. And he's literally blowing smoke in my face. I caught a tuna, but I just started throwing up. And I remember throwing up over the side of the boat. And the wave came up and just threw the throw up right back in my face. And I was like, I'm just going to pretend like that was mostly water. I'm going to pretend like that was mostly water, but it wasn't.
Dude.
It's a different kind of person, man. Those coastal folks, man.
Yeah, so man.
Tennessee, I'm originally from Colorado. Like, I'm not raised on that stuff. I don't know how to do that, but.
Hey, cool. Me either, it's man. Cool. Dude, so I lived in Jacksonville for 2 years, right? On the ocean and all that. And, I never went in past my knees, bro, the whole time I was there. It's just not what I do. I'm a great swimmer, all that. It's just the things that are in that water, man, they scare me, man. They do. I'm just going to tell you. And it was just something that I was like, you know what? I need to go do this. Number one, because it's hunting. Like, it's literally underwater hunting. I mean, I feel like, the opportunity was presented to me. I feel like I'd be an idiot to just be like, you know what? I'm scared of the water. I'm not going to do that. Now, do shark attacks happen to spear fishermen? Sure, they do. Just like bear attacks and mountain lion attacks happen to backcountry hunters, but you know, it's few and far between, right? So, you know, I figured I'd take that chance, go down there and experience a once in a lifetime trip. And I did not regret it because it was incredible, man.
That's amazing, man. You brought back some bad memories with the jellyfish. Oh, my wife and I were in, I want to say we were in Hawaii or something, but we were snorkeling and all of a sudden every inch of our body was stinging. Like jellyfish so small, you couldn't see them. And we had just got out of the water and just like the entire day, it just felt like we had electricity going through our skin, man.
Ooh, was it gone after a day?
Yeah, it was. It was. Okay. Yeah. It wasn't too bad. Fortunately, we didn't hang out in it. As soon as it started, we were gone. Sure. So I'm not sure if we got it for too long, but God, that was awful.
Bet, dude. I've never been stung by a jellyfish.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was even our baby moon. So we were all like, I think we went to the hotel doctor to check out, make sure that she's okay and all this shit, 'cause she was pregnant, but everything was fine. It was just weird to just be in water that just feels like electricity.
Poo-wee.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I'm a little jealous. I've always wanted to go on a boys trip. In fact, I've got a couple boys that are talking about it, but who knows if we'll ever make it happen.
So. Sure.
But yeah, man, Josh, that was an awesome story. What else you got for us? Give us another one.
I mean, antelope season was so antelope, I had drawn a 3-point unit this year for muzzleloader antelope, and the season fell September 21 through the 26th. Those are fucked up dates, right? You got to think about the elk. So I'm actually elk hunting in the unit that I'm hunting these antelope in. And so I just was able to take 5 days of time, take it off from elk hunting, and I'm chasing antelope because it took 3 points. I'm not just going to not hunt the antelope tag. So day one, dude, it was bleak. Saw a few, not even any bucks. Day two, saw a young buck at night that I could have shot right off the side of the road, dude. But, I mean, he was barely legal. I mean, it was I almost did it. I'll be honest with you. No, there's no shame in it. But I just couldn't do it, man. That thing was so tiny, dude. Let him go. Next day, didn't see anything. And then finally on the fifth day, so driving into a spot I had high hopes for. Didn't see anything. Get all the way to the end of that road. You know, on the way back out of road, you see stuff at kind of a different angle, right? You get to see different things you couldn't see on the way in. And one spot that I'd looked at, but I was not able to see it from this angle, there's a big old herd of goats. I'm like, awesome. So I pull over, put the spotter on the window. I'm like, dude, I would shoot him. So I'd already went on, I don't know how many stalks up to that point. So failed stalks up to that point. But, you know, I'm thinking, you know, this may or may not work out. So point being for saying that is when I got out of the truck, I didn't take my pack with me. I just took my orange vest, no water, a kill kit, and my muzzleloader, dude. And that is it, man. And so I start walking out there, and I thought they were like three drainages removed. I come up to the top of the hill in that first drainage, and they're staring right at me about 150 yards. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. So they start hauling ass towards private. Yeah, man. They start hauling ass towards private, and the buck's in the back. And, of course, this is right in the middle of the rut, dude. And that curiosity killed him, man, because he starts to follow his does, and I just hit him with – finally, he just turned and looked at me, and I'm looking through that little peep sight. I'm like, and this is frontal. I'm like, God, dog, he's a long ways. But I was like, this is day five. I got one more day. I may send it. I cocked the hammer back, settled that thing on my shoulder. I'm like, dude, I'm going to shoot this thing. And there was a good wind. So literally the smoke was there for like 1 second. It just blew right out of my face, completely clear. I'd never seen nothing like it. It was awesome. Like puff of smoke, shoof, and it was gone. And the does are running, and the buck's right behind the does. I'm like, I missed his ass. All of a sudden, I see his offside shoulder just pinwheel, and I'm like, oh no, he's toast, dude. He went like 60 yards, just piled up, blew his heart out. But man, it was looking bleak for antelope this year. Very, very. The unit I was hunting, man, I don't know if it was a winter kill or what, but the word is that people weren't killing antelope, man. I saw one guy got him one close to the road. But there weren't a lot of antelope killed there, muzzleloader, in this particular unit last year from what I had heard from some of the locals. But I was able to get it done. Nice goat. He was short, man, he was fat. I shot a nice mid-70s in 2019 with my bow, and this one was nowhere near the height like that. The one I shot with my bow in 19 was about a 14-inch goat. But yeah, this one was shorter, but his mass just blew that other one out of the water, man. I mean, the tops of his cutters were like 3 inches around, like insane, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. I got a funny story for you. I haven't actually told this story to anyone.
Here we go.
But it's an antelope story. So I might've mentioned to you over just chat that like I fell opening day of elk, entire season gone. Like,
that's right. That's right.
Yeah. So I was busted my back, pinched nerve. It's like, I couldn't take a shit. It was awful. It was a terrible, so much pain. Took me 3 months before I could even like kind of work out. Either way, I tried to go antelope hunting because I was like, man, I'm just gonna drive around in my truck. Like, it's not that hard. It's not elk hunting, right? It's plains. So let me try this out. So my buddy goes, hey, try this unit. And I'm like, all right, I'll try this unit. So I take a day off work and I just go drive around. And it was good for the soul, especially after like not getting to elk hunt and just like basically the season just disappearing from me.
Sure.
But I get in, I learned when you hunting antelope, and people listen to this, you don't stop when you see them in your truck. You drive past them. They don't care if you're driving.
That is a fact.
If you pull over, boom, you're busted. Game over. So I see an antelope.
You shouldn't even slow down if you can.
Yeah. Yeah. You just keep going. So I saw an antelope, and I'm like, all right, there he is. And he's actually bedded. And I'm like, I've never seen one laying down before. So I'm like, I'm just going to keep driving. So I drive behind this berm, you know, large berm, and I park. And I get up to the top and I'm like, all right, I see this guy, I look at my Onyx, and I'm like, all right, I think there's a way for me to kind of get around this other hillside. So I walk like 2 miles, a big old loop, and I'm like, I think he's right here. So I'm walking up this hillside, and turns out I was off by about 40 feet.
That's so easy to do, man. So easy to do.
So I'm coming over this hillside and I'm ready to kill this thing. I got my arrow knocked. He sees me, I see him at the exact same time. So unfortunately, he gets up and boogers off. But like, I was probably 40 yards. It's as close as I've ever been to an antelope. Pretty proud of myself.
That's close.
I was like, hell yeah. Especially after a day of other shit stocks that don't even matter, right? That's what happens with antelope hunting. The funny part is that at the end of the day, I run into another hunter and I'm like, man, it's a hell of a day. You have any luck? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, well, I was just chasing these guys. I actually parked and I was like, you know, wandering around trying to find this herd. And he's like, yeah. He's like, if I didn't spend points on this tag. And I'm like, points on this tag? What are you talking about? Because I had an over-the-counter tag. And so, like, my buddy told me this is an over-the-counter unit. So I spent the whole damn day hunting this unit and got that close. I mean, I'm talking 40 yards. If I had been 40 feet over, I would have come up behind that antelope and I would have killed him. But turns out, yeah, you need a couple points to draw that unit. So I just basically drove around all day in that unit for no reason. So, like, I still had a few more hours to hunt, and I was like, well, that's that. I pulled up and I was like, are there any units nearby that are over the counter? I'm like, nope, there's nothing nearby that's over the counter. So the lesson to everyone out there, double check. If someone tells you a unit's over the counter, you double check that unit's over the counter. No,
that's I didn't kill anything.
Yeah, I didn't kill anything, so no harm, no foul. But that was the closest stock I've ever had on an antelope. Almost was, I mean, for lack of a better term, it was almost poaching.
Hey, 40 yards is close, bro. That's a good stalk.
Yeah. I mean, he was just right over this. I mean, there's no big hills, right? It's just all little berms. And he's right sure. over the edge. And I just snuck up right on him, man. Snuck up right on him. It worked out almost exactly how I'd planned. Fortunately, it didn't in that case.
God, dog. Hey, speaking of running into hunters and antelopes, so I got a buddy. He was down hunting in the unit. We've both killed antelope in this unit. It's an OTC unit. And so he's putting a stalk on these pronghorn, and he's hiding behind the chola cactus. You know what I mean? Hiding behind the cactus, kind of moving amongst the cactus, staying hidden. And all of a sudden, he hears an ATV coming down the road. He's like, you have got to be kidding me. So he rides right up to my buddy and yells out, you doing any good? There's pronghorn like 100 yards away, dude. And my buddy's got his release on, and it's on the knock. And the guy's saying, are you doing any good? It was this old man. And my buddy's like, it took all
not anymore.
On him. Dude, and that's what he said. That's exactly what he said. He said, well, not anymore. But he rode right up on, I mean, it was an old guy, whatever, but have some awareness, man. God, you see somebody in a stalking position like that with their release on their D loop. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Man. It goes back to the tip number one that we gave, right? Just keep driving. Drive to the point that you can get out of sight and then get an angle. You can watch them stalk. You can watch everything, but you just can't stop the truck, man.
That's all.
Stop
man.
The truck, everything's gone. And that was the first lesson I learned this year. So,
yeah, man. That's a good tip. That's a great tip.
Yeah. I asked a lot of people a lot of questions about antelope hunting, and that one never came up. So that's the one that I'll say was like, I don't know how many times. It's just that you park and they're staring at you already.
Oh, yeah.
You got no chance. But if you drive right, and I noticed that because I literally parked, got out, watched these guys run away from me, and another car drove by. They didn't even think twice. And I was like, oh, well, I should have been that guy. So
wow.
This podcast is not about hunting tips, man. This is about
what did it say? Pro tip number 1,161.
Well, Josh, you got any more for us, man? Otherwise, you've given us plenty. I don't mind wrapping up right here, but I'm not going to cut you short if you got another good story you want to tell.
Man, I'll tell you what, the spearfishing was good, man. That was cool reliving that one. I mean, I got all kind of stories, man. I'm going to have a lot more to tell. But I'll tell you what, I'll tell you briefly about me and the guy I was telling you that I was spearfishing with, Brandon Linder. We went on a little bit of a turkey tour last year, and he flew into town, picked him up at the airport. We get back to my place early afternoon. Literally, he unpacks his shit and puts his camo on, and I've got turkeys nearby me to OTC unit. And we head up the hill, literally like 15 minutes from my house. We get I got a little listening point. That's where I start almost every hunt, man. I get to the listening point because you can hear so far. It is insane. And so we got halfway up my listening point, dude. The day he was just on the plane, dude, we get halfway up the listening point.
You coming in from Florida?
Yeah, coming in from Florida, okay. Dude. Fresh off the plane.
He's going up, you know, 9,000 feet, isn't he?
So this was at like 6,800.
Okay, gotcha.
But so we get, you know, halfway up there, we hear a gobble, and he's all the way across the road, like all the way across the highway. So we get down, we get all the way across the highway, and he's literally right behind the campground. And nobody's there camping, and we get around the edge of it, and we set up. We're trying to call him in. He's responding great, but he's not coming in. He's just kind of, I don't know, sometimes it feels like when they want to be somewhere, like they'll respond, but they're still going to head in that direction unless they see the turkey. That's just kind of what I feel like. And we were calling at it, and it was responding, but it was not veering off its course. And we watched him walk on to private, but it was just cool to, you know, literally hours of him being off a plane, you know, to be here, his first Merriam's gobbles. And then the next morning, I actually had a spot reserved on the, so there's some spots on the Colorado website that you can go and reserve a place to hunt certain little management units or management areas. And I had a spot reserved for about a week or two before he got there. So we got to leave really early in the morning, and we get there and never scouted or anything. I had just bird hunted it before, and it looked turkey as hell. So I was just put in for it and drew it. It just so happened to be open and got in there. And so we go there in the morning. There's a guy in the parking lot. So I was initially like, shit, this sucks. Cause it's one of those river bottom pieces. It's not super huge. I mean, it's fairly big, but I mean, you know, if there's a couple guys in there, it's pretty crowded. Yeah. But I was like, all right, it's only one guy. And I told my buddy, as soon as I put the truck in park, I'm like, grab your shit and we are out ASAP. Cause they were still bobbling around with shit. I'm like, we're gone. So we beat them. We fly past them and we get like maybe 500 yards in there, about to where I could hear the river running. And like I said, my buddy's a turkey nut, been turkey hunting a long time, a lot longer than me. I've only been hunting them for 2 or 3 years now. So I was about to pull my hoot out, my hoop tube out, and I was like, hey, you know how to hoot with your mouth, huh? He was like, it looked at me crazy, like, yeah, no shit. I was like, go on and hit one, face that way and hit one. I said, face that way and hit one. He got like one note in. Ooh, ooh, blah, 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 blah. Whole bottom just explodes, dude. Like it was... We were so fired up, man, because I'd never been there. Like, just, you know, as far as for turkey, you know, never been there. But I was like, man, there's got to be turkeys in here. And sure enough, that whole bottom just erupted. Unfortunately, they were roosted about 100 yards on the private side, dude, like 100 yards. But we're like, dude, we'll be able to pull them on the public. And we tried it the whole morning. They were not having it. I'm sure they've been wiped out a couple times. So they just kind of milled around on private. But anyway, directly after that, so we didn't kill there, went up to Nebraska. I got some really, really good private access up in Nebraska. And so we actually tried to hunt public first. Actually, we went to hunt another piece of private that I've never hunted, but the roads were so bad, the landowner's like, I would not come down this road. So I was like, looking at the map of his piece, and there's a public piece that it touches, but it's literally 5 miles through public to get to the private. I told my buddy, I'm like, it's going to be a long day. We're about to walk all the way through this public to get to his piece. And we did that 5 miles just to get to that private piece. It wasn't a big piece, yeah. But dude, that place was devoid of turkeys. I'm talking about there was no turkeys there, no sign. We found some feathers, but they was old, man. Like, I mean, it was devoid of turkeys. So we're just dejected, dude. The wind's gusting like 45 miles an hour. You can't keep your hat on your head. So, you know, it was one of those 10, 11 mile days. We had an outstanding breakfast afterwards, about 1, 2 o'clock. You know, fortunately it wasn't like Colorado miles, right? It's Nebraska. So there's some rolling hills and stuff, but it's not like being at 12,000 feet.
An hour and a half, you can go 5 miles on
there.
On
you can roll. You can roll.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good long day. We didn't kill anything. But then the next day, like I said, I had that really good piece that I've killed on last year. And that afternoon, actually, I was like, dude, forget it. Let's just go to this new piece. I'm telling you, the birds are going to be there. And sure enough, we leave and go there that afternoon. And we get there that evening and we park on the side of this hill where I always park. Wind's still ripping, dude. It's calmed down a little bit, but it's still blowing like 30. We're walking in there. Typically, we just blow the crow call, right? But I mean, the wind's ripping, dude. Like something had to be right on top of us to answer. So we're just creeping through. And also, my buddy's taking his jacket off. And I look, I'm like, get down. And like 80 yards. So it kind of looks like the Black Hills almost, like just pine ridges and like draws and stuff. And across the draw, There's two toms just blew up, dude, in the wind. Their tails just like getting blown in the wind. I was like, dude, they're right there, man. So we tried to make a move on them with the gobbler decoy and didn't get it done. But the next morning, dude, high hopes. As soon as we got out the truck, shut the door, going nuts, dude. And long story short, we killed my buddy one right off the bat. Then the next day, we hunted another side of the property, and that was another 10-mile day. We got him his other bird. And before that, we went straight to South Dakota after that river bottom hunt in Colorado. Damn. We went to South Dakota, dude, and hunted our way back down. But we didn't kill there. I almost did, dude. I was behind the fan, man. And there was two long beards and four. I put a video up the other day, two long beards and four Jakes. And I got behind the fan, dude, and the Jakes came to like 5 feet, man. It was insane. But the two long beards didn't want nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have stuck my gun barrel between the tail fan and touched those Jakes, dude. But those long beards are like, nah. But it was a cool tour, man. I'm missing one species. Awesome, I'm going to go to Kansas this year, southeastern Kansas, and get my eastern. That's what I need for my Grand Slam.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I need an eastern. And what do they got in Florida? The
Osceolas.
Osceola. Yeah, that's what I'm missing. So. Hopefully I get the Eastern one here this year, and then the Osceola I'll get in the next couple of years. I know somebody who hunts down there. I'm hoping to find some kind of like pig hunt to trade to get me sure. down there and finish my Grand Slam up. But turkeys are fun, man. I got a funny story. It's actually a deer hunt where a bunch of turkeys scared the living shit out of me. Down here in Texas, right? And you can hunt rivers in Texas. So I've got my shotgun and I'm deer hunting. You got to use double op buck. Basically, you don't have many options, right? You just walk down the riverbed.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to have water in it. It just needs to be a river. So it's a dry river, and we're walking, and we're a couple miles in. Long story short, we get to this like big concrete barrier, and I've told this story on the podcast before, but it's this large – I mean, I don't even know what it is. It blocks the entire river, and the river is maybe 20 feet wide with 20-foot walls. So we're really in this groove. Like, you can't see out of it. But we crawl under – we get to this giant concrete barrier, and we're like, all right, let's just look what's on the other side, see what it looks like, and then let's get the hell out of here with my buddy. So we kind of crawl underneath because there's an obvious little path. And, of course, Texas, lots of floods. On the other side of this concrete barrier is just a ton of wood, like giant logs, just wood. So we pop my head up, and there's a whitetail buck, like a real good buck. Ooh. And this is down in South Texas, you know, the Golden Triangle?
Oh, yeah.
Like where just monsters are. Mm-hmm. So I think I never aged him. I don't really know much about whitetail hunting. It's the only time I've ever been whitetail hunting. But I think it was a monster of tomorrow. Like, I never even measured him, but he looked young, but just had a huge rack.
Sure.
And if you give him 5 more years, I bet he was a freak of nature. Either way, he's huffing, he's stomping. He knows something's up, but he doesn't quite figure it out. And I'm only exposed from the shoulders up. But my gun's over my shoulders. So eventually he turns around, I pull my shotgun up. Turns broadside, I take my shot, and he runs around this corner kind of up and out of the river, and I'm like, shit, if he leaves the river, I can't get him. Like, I'm completely lost. And earlier in the day, I'd actually walked up on a giant hog, like a 300-pound hog, and shot him. And as it turns out, double op buckshot does not leave a good blood trail. So when we went to where I shot that hog at like 20 yards, there was no blood. Wow. None whatsoever. So I was like, my buddy's like, well, maybe you just suck, man. Maybe you just missed him. And I'm like, well, I guess I missed him. So when I shoot the deer, and this deer was maybe 45 yards, 45, 50 yards. He's like, well, you missed the hog. Why wouldn't you miss the deer at double the distance? He's like, you just kind of suck, man. And I'm like, all right, fuck you.
Sure.
Like, yeah. I saw that. I was like, when I hit that deer, I saw him tuck his arm in. So I knew I hit him. I just knew for a fact that I hit him. And my buddy, by the way, he didn't see any of this. He was under, you know, like I said, we crawled under this concrete barrier. So he's down underneath somewhere, and he's just like taking my word for everything that's happening.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, let's give it 40 minutes, 30 minutes, and then we'll just peek up and see what we see on the other side of this, like outside of the river, because we can't technically leave the river. It's all private. You give it some time. We're just digging through the leaves, looking for any blood. Not one drop of blood.
Woof.
Not one. And I'm like, ah, man, I am just the worst hunter in the world. Did I just injure this thing? Like, what happened? I don't get it. Either way, all right, 30 minutes goes off. Let's go look over and see what we see. So I'm walking up. My buddy's still looking through the leaves and trying to find some blood. And I poke my head up and over that river edge. And there's 30 turkeys.
God.
And you know, like, even a grouse, right? A grouse takes off. When those wings hit, it's just that level of like, whoa.
Oh, yeah, no shit.
And when I pop up, the only thing's more scared than me is those turkeys. And so 30 turkeys are right on me. God. And I take all of that right into my chest. And I just, it's scary. I've never been so scared in my life. Just being hit by this base of all of these wings taken off my body. He thinks he's duck hunting all of a sudden. He's got a shotgun in the air and he's trying to shoot these birds down. And I'm like, it's not turkey season. Like, he just panics. It was just a terrifying moment. And he's like, should I shoot these birds? I'm like, no, you shouldn't shoot these birds, because legally our shot can't leave the river. There's all sorts of rules. We got to keep our shot in the river. But
wow.
I was like, let's just worry about the deer. Don't worry about these 30 birds that just flew off and scared the living shit out of us. Basically, we're poking over our heads. It turns out that deer ran up the river, and then as soon as it hit the top, went around the river edge. So we're standing there at the edge. We look to our right, and there he is.
And no shit.
We grab his leg and pull him right back into the river, and never had to trespass. So it was
crazy. That is awesome, dude.
Crazy story. Man, I think about those birds. Like, when I'm having, like, when my heart gets elevated, and I'm like, holy shit, what the hell was that? Like, I always think back to those damn fucking turkeys, man.
Well, you know, they had to be terrified too, because their first instinct is to run. So, you know, if they all took off flying like that, they were petrified.
Yeah, I don't even know. Maybe they came in after I shot the deer. Like, I don't know, because you had to go through them basically to get to where the deer was. So I don't know how they got there, but it was fucking, man, turkeys.
I tell you, you're gonna love those Osceolas, man. They are so aggressive, dude. Just, it's a whole different turkey. Like, their gobble's completely, it is not anywhere near the, you know, the Merriam's are those Osceolas are. I mean, it's, I can't even, I mean, it's insane, dude. Like, the difference in them is wild. I had actually both of mine that I shot last year down there, they both attacked the decoy.
No shit.
Yeah, man, they're aggressive, dude. Somehow, man, long story short, my buddy, I was using his gun, I just didn't feel like flying with mine, and never use a red dot, couldn't get the red dot to come on. Turns out the battery was dead. Long story short, I tried to send a shot looking between the underneath the scope and like above the rib of the shotgun. It's like a tiny hole about half the size of the peep on your bow. I'm like, dude, I can't not shoot this bird. Giant Tom right in front of me. So I just, it, you know, I put the tiny hole on that turkey. When finally I couldn't see any light, I'm just like, fuck it. Boom. And I shot, and I've got it all on video, dude. The shot hits like 3 feet in front of the turkey, but somehow turkey drops stone dead. I don't know if a rock hit it. I don't know, but the shot hit, like, I had to send it to you, like 3 feet in front of this bird.
Oh, shit.
I don't know how it died, dude.
Damn.
Yeah, I mean, in front of the bird, and somehow he died. Huh. I don't know.
Maybe just like ricocheted off the ground.
That's what I'm thinking, man. Ricochet.
Damn. All right, Josh. Man, this was fun, man. I appreciate you coming on. I don't know. If you have anything else, I'm not going to stop you from telling. Otherwise, I want you to tell the people, like, you mentioned a couple times you dropped some videos. Where can they find your videos? Let them know about your podcast, obviously. And I think we're going to co-release this episode, if that's all right with you.
That's right.
Let them know about that, because you've got some great stories on there that I know you've told on your podcast that you didn't tell on ours today, so people can find more great hunting stories there. So let the people know where they can find you, man.
Yeah, man. So I'm on IG at, what is it? High Country_Jaywalk. High Country, H-I-G-H. Country, all one word, _ Jaywalk, Jawalk, man. I put up some cool hunting clips, man. That's about all you're gonna see, is just a little tiny bit of football and a lot of hunting, man. You know, my podcast is called Retired to Hunt. Check it out, man. It's some, you know, it's very similar to this. It's just some dudes sitting around telling hunting stories, talking hunting, you know, maybe a little bit of sports in there, but have a lot of fun in the process of doing it, man. But yeah, check it out, man. And it was a hell of a time sitting here shooting the shit with you, man.
Yeah, bud. And I'll put links to all that stuff in the show notes. So if anybody wants to find Josh and the shit he's putting out, just go down there. Easy to find, man. Well, thank you. I appreciate it, brother. And, you know, I want to hear how your next season goes as well. So we'll have you back on again, because you seem to have more interesting hunting seasons than most people I know.
Well, let's keep in touch, man. I'd love to talk about it.
For sure. Are you going to go back to the Western Hunt Fest this year?
No, I'll be there.
Are you going to actually compete in anything this time?
Probably not. No. Probably not. Just shake some hands and talk to some people. Man, I'm not a tournament archer, dude. I shoot in my backyard enough to
Yeah, me too. But you got to do the pack out, man.
I don't have to do no pack out. I'll do a pack out when I got something laying there dead, man.
There you go. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on. And all listeners, guys, thanks for listening. If you're coming from Josh's podcast, check out the rest of our catalog. We got a lot of fun stories. And if you're coming from my listeners, go listen to Josh's stuff. He's got some great podcasts as well, which have a lot of NFL players on them, which is pretty cool. A lot of those guys. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, man.